In the early 1920s, a sinister wave of death swept through Oklahoma's Osage Nation. One by one, wealthy Osage people began disappearing or dying under mysterious circumstances. Molly Burkhart, an Osage woman who had married a white man named Ernest Burkhart, watched in horror as her family members were systematically eliminated. First, her sister Anna vanished, only to be found days later with a bullet hole in her head. Then her mother Lizzie died from a wasting illness. Next, her sister Rita and brother-in-law Bill Smith were killed when their home exploded in the dead of night. The pattern was unmistakable. Someone was hunting the Osage. What made these murders particularly chilling was their motive. The Osage had become the richest people per capita in the world after massive oil deposits were discovered beneath their reservation. Each tribal member received head rights, shares in the mineral trust that could be inherited but never sold. As Osage people died, their head rights transferred to their heirs, concentrating wealth in fewer hands. This deadly mathematics created a terrifying incentive. Kill an Osage, inherit a fortune. As one investigator would later observe, the question isn't who wanted them dead, but who didn't. After being forcibly removed from their Midwest territories, the Osage purchased seemingly worthless rocky Oklahoma land in 1870. Chief Watien Ka predicted, "White man cannot put iron thing in ground here. White man will not come to this land." It was a desperate choice for a tribe whose population had fallen to 3,000, just a third of its previous size. When the government pushed to divide the reservation, the tribe's attorney John Palmer and Chief James Bighart secured a crucial provision. Oil, gas, coal, or other minerals covered by the lands are hereby reserved to the Osage tribe. This created an underground reservation that would prove invaluable. The discovery of oil brought unprecedented wealth. Osage families built mansions, drove luxury cars, and hired white servants. But their prosperity made them vulnerable. Claiming Native Americans couldn't manage their money, the government appointed white guardians to oversee their finances, creating conditions that enabled exploitation and murder. Though Hale cultivated an image as the Osage people's champion through charitable work and advocacy, even promising to help Molly Burkhart solve Anna Brown's murder, this benevolent facade concealed his sinister scheme. His true goal was to consolidate valuable head rights under Molly's control, which he could access through her marriage to his nephew, Ernest Burkhart. The murders followed a pattern. Henry Rowan, a 40-year-old Osage man and Hale's supposed friend, was found shot in his car, with Hale as the beneficiary of his $25,000 life insurance policy. Terror spread as Osage Homes installed electric lights, not for show, but for protection. Bill Smith, who had married two of Molly's sisters, began investigating the murders. After claiming he was getting warm, he and Rita heard suspicious noises and relocated downtown. When their watchdogs were poisoned, Bill predicted his own death. On March 9, 1923, an explosion destroyed their house, killing Rita instantly. Despite hospital guards, Bill succumbed to severe burns 4 days later. As Osage deaths mounted, the tribal council sought federal help. The case reached J. Edgar Hoover, the young director of the Bureau of Investigation, later FBI. Hoover assigned Tom White, a former Texas Ranger with steel gray eyes and eerie composure of a gunslinger, to lead the investigation. White represented an old-school frontier lawman in Hoover's modernizing organization. White's undercover team included John Wren, likely the Bureau's only American Indian agent. A part Ute former spy with a brilliant investigative mind, Wren brought vital perspective to a case previously hindered by agents' prejudice. The team infiltrated Osage County with simple covers, two as Texas cattlemen, one running an insurance office, while Wren posed as a medicine man. The investigation faced daunting obstacles. Evidence and autopsy records had vanished, witnesses kept dying, and a local attorney's knowledge of confidential reports suggested a mole. White discovered previous investigations had been compromised, with reports missing from a U.S. attorney's office. The case would test whether federal law enforcement could deliver justice where local authorities had failed. White's breakthrough came when he investigated Bill Smith's final words. Though initially denied by officials, Smith had named William K. Hale and Ernest Burkhart as his only two enemies. Probate records revealed the murders followed a pattern designed to funnel the family's head rights to Molly Burkhart. When Hale produced an alibi for the Smith bombing, White brought in an imprisoned outlaw who revealed Hale and Burkhart had previously solicited him to kill the Smiths. Confronted with this evidence, Burkhart confessed that Hale had orchestrated the murders through intermediaries. The trial made national headlines as a diabolic conspiracy more blood-curdling than those of the old frontier days. During proceedings, Molly's 4-year-old daughter Anna died, allegedly from illness. Though no foul play was found, every death now raised Osage suspicions. Molly returned to court after burying her daughter, sitting alone, a widow to her husband's betrayal before his sentencing. Though Hale and his conspirators received life sentences, the full scope of the Osage murders far exceeded the official count of 24. Scholars estimate the death toll reached into the hundreds. Dennis McAuliffe's research of tribal records revealed that between 1907 and 1923, 605 Osages died, an annual death rate far above the national average. The murders relied on an extensive network of accomplices: doctors falsifying death certificates, undertakers conducting hasty burials, and various legal professionals profiting from the Indian business. One historian noted that if Hale had revealed everything, many of the county's elite would have faced imprisonment. The impact echoes through generations. Descendants like Margie Burkhart, Molly's granddaughter, continue private investigations. She revealed that she, her sister, and Molly narrowly escaped death. A child's earache prevented them from staying at the Smith's house the night it exploded. "My dad had to live knowing that his father had tried to kill him," she said, highlighting the enduring trauma these crimes inflicted. For the Osage people, the wounds remain raw. Descendants continue private investigations, harboring doubts about relatives and guardians. Margie Burkhart, Molly's granddaughter, revealed a crucial detail missing from FBI records. She, her sister, and Molly had planned to stay at the Smith's house the night it exploded, but her father's earache kept them home. "My dad had to live knowing that his father had tried to kill him," she said, a stark reminder of generational trauma. The Osage murders force America to confront uncomfortable truths about institutional racism, greed, and delayed justice. Yet the story also showcases resilience. The Osage Nation endures, preserving their heritage while moving forward. As Mary Jo Webb, who investigated her grandfather's murder for decades, observed, "This land is saturated with blood. The blood still cries out, demanding we remember this dark chapter in American history."